You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 51. This minute opens with Vickers asking David, what did he say? And ends with a lab computer processing the sample of the engineer's blood.
What did he say?
He said, try harder.
David's voice is usually light, but on this line, they really boosted the bass. It makes me wonder, could David modify his voice at will? I don't see any reason why he has a set vocal range. It would be interesting to see synthetics use mimicry in another Alien story. Not sure if that's been done, maybe in the comics. There's a lot of stories there and I have read very few of them. I think this is the first time we get an indication that there's an element of danger to David. That he is not as mild and placid as we have been led to believe. This is almost halfway through the movie, so it's a nice slow progression. Up to this point, we have seen a fairly sympathetic and servile character. And even in this minute, we are positioned to sympathize with him. He's not really doing anything wrong. He's holding his own. But by doing so, it reveals he has an edge to him. The conflict between Vickers and David is fantastic. He's infuriatingly calm, even offering her tea as if he's unaware of how much he is irritating her. She's practically boiling over now, shaking. She has such a look of rage on her face. Her hand becomes a talon as she almost clutches his face, but she holds back and storms off instead. David, of course, was completely unfazed, but we see just how physical and dangerous this dynamic is. There is certainly some irony to be found here, these two children of Wayland, so physically alike, which is most apparent in this scene where their faces are so close together. In terms of personality, too, they bear many similarities, and yet they can't stand each other. In another life, I think they would have made powerful allies, though the idea of the two of them running the Wayland Corporation is a terrifying thought. We cut to David, retrieving the ampule from the fridge, and now we see him without gloves. Given that he proceeds to really make full contact with its contents, we can gather that gloves are not something he wears other than for the benefit of an audience, to better integrate with the customs and behaviors of his human counterparts. I do like that. The gloves serve him no purpose personally, so perhaps it isn't inaccurate to assume he wore those gloves in the previous minute purely for Wayland's benefit, or to otherwise follow some established protocol. Shaw and Ford are seen performing a genetic analysis on the sample of the engineer's blood. Going back to the subject of humanity's origins that we discussed way back in the first few minutes, it is frustrating that we'll never really know for certain, did the engineers seed all life on Earth, or did they simply design human beings? I think the latter scenario is the more likely one because it makes the connection between humans and engineers more personal and significant. Otherwise, if engineers seeded all life on Earth, humans would be no more important to our creators than otters or ocelots. It also explains why humans are seemingly made in the engineer's image when no other species does. Although, that said, have they seeded life on other planets? Are there other worlds where there are creatures that look like us? It sort of reminds me of the Star Trek The Next Generation episode, The Chase, where you find out that the progenitors, this ancient race of beings, seeded life across the galaxy, and that's why so many species from Klingons, humans, Vulcans all look so similar. So it seems like it's a recurring thought or concept that people keep coming back to, and it's one that makes a certain amount of instinctual sense, I think. I guess it's because we are a species that colonizes and spreads out, so it seems strange that there is nothing else out there in the galaxy, at least as far as we know. We cut a few times between Shaw and David, both on a path of discovery, both playing in the realm of the gods. I like to think the mutagen is intended to be the Promethean fire of this story, a source of immense power, and capable equally of creation and destruction. There's no doubt this is what the title of the film refers to. Not much is known about the ampules or urns. There's a bit of stuff in the promotional material, but nothing we couldn't already surmise from context. For example, apparently the urns are made of steatite, also known as soapstone, which is exactly what the urns look like they're made of. You don't need to be Fifield to know that. Interesting to note that the Wayland website is very explicit in labeling the mutagen as a weapon. I feel that's almost akin to aliens coming to Earth, wandering through a lab, encountering something toxic, mishandling it, and assuming it's intended to be a weapon. Sure, it seems like the mutagen can be weaponized, but it's not in and of itself purely a force for destruction. We see in the beginning of the film that it's not intended to be as such. The website also suggests that the corporation bombed planets with the mutagen to observe its effects. Sure. The images will be in the footnotes. By contrast, the book David's Drawings gives us more information, and more reliable information at that. The book depicts the mutagen as purely a creative force, and yet at the same time, in that creation is destruction, it's destructive, and it is harmful. David creates life, but it is an abomination. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.